Good evening. Welcome to Left, Right and Center. I'm Vishnu Shom. On the program tonight, India records its highest one-day COVID spike, 1,52,879 cases and more than 800 deaths in the country. It's the fifth consecutive day of 1 lakh plus daily cases, India adding over 6.72 lakh cases in just the last 5 days. India's positivity rate up almost up several times in the last 1 month. What exactly is the situation in some of our big hospitals? What you'll just see in a few moments from now is a cry for help from one of the senior most doctors at one of India's poshest hospitals, the Leelavati Hospital in Mumbai. And later, our special interview with the principal scientific advisor to the Prime Minister on the process of vaccination at a time when several states have said that vaccines are running out. Direct questions, straight answers from Dr. K. Vijayaraghavan, a key member of the government team formulating and implementing policy on COVID in our country. But what you see here is a viral video which has highlighted the scene at Mumbai's top multi-specialty hospital, Leelavati Hospital, which set up beds in the lobby of the 8th floor near the lift to accommodate patients. Dr. Jaleel Parker, pulmonologist, the senior pulmonologist associated with Leelavati Hospital, has spoken to us about what exactly it is we are seeing over here. And what you're going to hear now is almost a cry for help from the doctor on how desperate the situation increasingly is, not just at Leelavati, but in so many parts of Mumbai and Maharashtra.
If you come to the ground reality, you will see that there are patients who are just waiting on wheelchairs and on chairs just to get into the hospital. And it's like a great tsunami that is going on. And I'm very happy that my hospital has gone way beyond their capacity to see to it, to accommodate everybody, to see to it that they get the right treatment and they go back home. The criticality this time, however, is not that high, but the sheer humongous volume of patients just flowing in to get treatment, to get oxygen, etc., is so high that, you know, we are overwhelmed and overworked too. Many of our colleagues call us in satellite towns and cities that the oxygen levels are low. Somebody the other day said that in Nasik there is no oxygen whatsoever, so they are finding it very difficult to treat. It's just the sheer volume that is crunching and killing every one of us.
Dr. Parker,
and my honest request last is, please, for God's sake, please see to it that remdesivir, tocilizumab, vaccination, they are available, because that's the only way we can save life, the only way we can conquer the COVID-19. So for God's sake, let there be no tapism, let there be no discussions, but let there be actions. In my hospital, there are no vaccinations for the last 2-3 days. There is shortage of remdesivir, there is shortage of tocilizumab. We have to beg, borrow, steal. I think things might get even worse than what it was a year back. So I am requesting whoever the authority is, please, it's a wake-up call again. It's a second wake-up call. The people that you are seeing in this, has shot this, they are the rich, and they are the poorest of the poor too. So it's not that there is any discrimination. So you can imagine the sheer volume that is there. The rich, they are lying on these beds.
Well, that's the situation at one of India's foremost hospitals. Dr. Parker over there speaking to me earlier on today. Well, amidst this concerning spike in COVID cases, the Mahakumbh continues to be underway in Uttarakhand. It's attracting a massive footfall, with lakhs congregating at the ghats of Haridwar ahead of the ritualistic Shahi Snan, which is very auspicious. The big worry over here, as in all other parts of the country, the raging COVID reality. My colleague Akshay Dongre reports.
Right now we're present in Haridwar, just a day ahead of the Shahi Snan, where lakhs of devotees and saint sadhus are expected to take dip in Ganges. We are near Har Ki Paudi, and evening prayers at the ghats of Ganga is taking place right now, where lakhs of devotees are already present. As far as the figures are concerned, the officials have said that in the last Shahi Snan that took place in March, around 37 lakh devotees were present here. Now the number is only expected to soar further. Amid all of these arrangements, as far as the social distancing is concerned, it seems that the authorities have not been able to ensure any kind of social distancing, despite there have been markings made almost everywhere at the ghats. There are several police officials, security officials here posted, but it seems that since so many people are here, there won't be any possibility of social distancing. We have certain people who have come from different parts of the country. कब आए आप यहाँ पर और क्या किसी प्रकार का आपको डर कोरोना को लेकर?
नहीं, हम लोग कल आए थे, कल अपनी जांच वगैरह करा के आए थे हम लोग। यहाँ पर प्रशासन की काफी अच्छी सुविधा है, प्रशासन ने, उत्तराखंड प्रशासन की हम तारीफ करेंगे, काबिले तारीफ कि उनकी व्यवस्था बहुत अच्छी है।
एक्चुअली यहाँ पर जो केसेस हमारे ऑल ओवर इंडिया में इंक्रीज हो रहे हैं, एक डर का विषय जरूर है, लेकिन यहाँ पर प्रशासन की जो व्यवस्था है काफी सुचारू रूप से की गई है।
जी, नहीं है।
मेरे मन में तो इस प्रकार को लेकर कोई डर नहीं है, क्योंकि जब हम बॉर्डर क्रॉस करके आए थे तब हमारी RT-PCR जो निगेटिव रिपोर्ट है यहाँ पर मेरे साथ है, वो देखी गई है और मेरे पास इसका प्रूफ भी है, आई एम कोरोना निगेटिव। और लेकिन जरूर लोगों को ध्यान रखना चाहिए, थोड़ा सा अपने आप में सोशल डिस्टेंस मेंटेन करके रखे, लेकिन यहाँ पर जो कि प्रैक्टिकली पॉसिबल नहीं है एक्चुअली यहाँ पर। यस,
ऑलराइट, वेल, earlier on today, I spoke to Dr. K. Vijayaraghavan. He's the principal scientific advisor to the Prime Minister and a key member of the team that is involved in the rollout of the vaccines in this country and looking at policy in terms of how vaccination can actually be stepped up. That's critical now at a time when several states are saying that they just don't have enough vaccines in numbers. Dr. Vijayaraghavan, India has vaccinated 10 crore people so far, 35 lakh doses in the last 24 hours. And that's extremely impressive. But still, at this pace of vaccination, how many more months would it take for us to vaccinate the present target group? In other words, those above 45 years of age.
You know, the point which many people get into is looking at rates of vaccination today and linearly extrapolating it into the future to cover a defined set of people. That would be a mistake. Please keep in mind that vaccination rates are constantly going up for a variety of reasons. At the ground level, more places, more mechanisms to vaccinate are being opened up. And at the supply level, production is going up, but also new vaccines will come into play. So it would not be correct to extrapolate from current vaccination rates alone, but linearly, but to extrapolate in a manner which adds on substantial inputs.
So the manufacture and supply of vaccines is presently strained in India. Now in the United States, there was Operation Warp Speed, which was announced in May last year, where there were $11 billion which was sanctioned, not just to support invention, but also to ramp up manufacture. Why did India not have something similar, at least to ramp up manufacturing when the time came, which is evidently now?
Well, there are three different points here. One, you must keep in mind that you're comparing apples and oranges. The size and scale of the U.S. manufacturing into vaccines and to different kinds of vaccines, the mRNA vaccines, which require cold storage, is very different from the route India adopted. India adopted its robust vaccine industry and got into scaling that up, which is something which was reasonably feasible, as opposed to going in for some new technology which was not open at all. That required an enormous amount of investment. That factor, that point that we have these capacity, was actually amplified, the second point is, enormously. Our drug controller modified the rulings and allowed production stockpiling even before clearance, so that should clearances come, the companies would be ready. This is an enormously enabling point which must be kept in mind. That allowed our companies, particularly the two where vaccines are now being made, to stockpile in advance, and even now allows other vaccines which are being tested to be stockpiled. And this is something which is very good. Otherwise, there'd be a lot of delay. Then there was also a huge amount of effort which went into making sure that the fill and finish and the pipeline was ready. So the result of all this is when the go-ahead came for emergency use authorization, the vaccines could roll out very, very rapidly. Now, as more vaccine production is needed, we must keep in mind what happened. as the cases came down earlier in the year, there was a feeling that I'm not amongst, you know, the government or the companies, but amongst people, that somehow vaccination could take its own course. And as the cases now have gone up, there is a feeling that vaccination needs to be done very urgently. Both are feelings which are immediate reaction to the present, and we need a little calm to see that production is going up, supply is going up, there are more vaccines coming, and things will roll out. We are dealing with a situation very different from the first wave a little more than a year ago. We have much better capacity to handle with PPEs, ventilators, hospital capacity. We have a large population which is being vaccinated now. So things are tough, but they are a very different situation from the start of the pandemic.
Dr. Vijayaraghavan, an Indian company with international customers, in other words, the Serum Institute, took a risk, and on their own, they invested in an untested drug at the time, the Oxford vaccine, AstraZeneca. Today, if they want to scale up production to meet India's requirements now, shouldn't the government offer to help meet the requirement since we all benefit from it? They've said that they need 3,000 crores.
You know, the company is an extraordinary company, as also is the other company, Bharat Biotech, and the companies which are coming up now. And the government is in constant touch with not just Serum Institute, but with other companies to look at ways by which they can assist in the expansion of manufacturing. So this is not something which is not going on. This is happening. Now, companies have a couple of ways at least by which they raise capital. They have their internal support. They have others who support through risk mitigation. And there's interest subvention. And these mechanisms are and have been explored. So I don't think, you know, it is correct to say that suddenly the company came up with a view that it needs this much and it's not available. These are matters which have been under discussion for a long time, and routes to increase manufacturing will play out soon.
What would those possible ways be? Are you suggesting that the government could consider financing? Because the option in the case of SII is that they go to the bank. That's what they've said on record.
Well, I don't know exactly which way of financing specific companies will end up doing, but all the options which I said on the table are there. There are people, investors in India and abroad, there are Indian banks, there's government programs, there are government R&D programs. All of this will add up into ensuring manufacturing grows. I don't see that as, you know, any of this resource being limited to expanding manufacturing. Manufacturing, by the way, once you start expanding, it takes a while to set that up and get it going. It's not a switch which opens up right away.
Which is why time is of essence. But sir, why were orders not placed in, let's say, September or October, when NEGVAC, which is one of the primary bodies which is looking at the vaccine rollout, why were orders not placed at that stage, which would have allowed a ramping up of facilities of manufacture at Bharat Biotech and Serum, so that, you know, and in a situation like this, when we've opened it up to plus 45s, we wouldn't have stayed saying, I'm running out of stocks in 2 days.
You know, the way decisions on vaccination are taken, who to vaccinate and so on, is a combination of groups which need the vaccines in terms of risk and being in the front line having comorbidities and so on. And that needs to be matched with the supplies end. If supplies were infinite, of course, everyone could get vaccinated right away. Now, how are supplies calibrated? There, the government works with the companies and asks them, what is their projection for ramping up the supplies? So it's not that the procurement or the decisions are done in a vacuum without the companies being involved. All of them are involved. Companies tend to project what they can do. Sometimes they might over-project or under-project because they're not, you know, they can't predict the exact circumstances. And governments also plan accordingly. And therefore, there's a calibration constantly taking place. And I don't think we need to worry about little ups and downs. They will even out, and we're going to see more distribution and more supplies.
Professor Vijayaraghavan, we speak about India's vaccine maitri, our vaccine diplomacy. That's been huge, obviously. It's benefited the lives of so many millions of people around the world. But today, India has banned the export of vaccines. How does it look, when a country which is called the pharmacy of the world you know, ends up banning the exports of these vaccines, and companies which are making these vaccines end up getting legal notices for non-delivery.
You know, you are again looking at small time windows and taking viewpoints rather than evening out over a larger time window. Companies have commitments nationally and internationally. The Indian government and the Prime Minister have repeatedly said that India is committed to vaccinating its citizens and also helping the world maximally. And these are all different aspects which need to balance according to availability. So if something goes up, you know, 1 week, there's availability, so, and the context here is such that one can export, it might go down another week. But over a period of time, it's calibrated. India has been extraordinary in ensuring, compared to, you know, many Western countries, it's been extraordinary in ensuring that its national and international commitments are both met. There are, you know, concerns expressed about the way other large economies, such as the US or the EU, could have done better in their international commitments.
Has India banked too heavily on just two firms, Serum and Bharat? We are now well into April, and for a country as large as ours, we still don't have any other options which are presently on the table. Would you have liked to have seen more of those options on the table to step up, you know, the numbers of vaccines being rolled out?
There are two points here. One is about the numbers of doses of any given vaccine, combination of vaccines, and the numbers of different kinds of vaccines. Both are important. There's no point in having multiple vaccines in suboptimal doses. And it's good to have multiple vaccines so that, you know, in different contexts, different vaccines will be useful. Now, India has got right now, and it's very unusual amongst countries in the world, that it's got manufacturing capacity. Two vaccines which have been approved. One more, the Sputnik, which is under consideration. Novavax and the Johnson & Johnson, which are going into bridging trials and hopefully will go past that soon. We have other vaccines which are being made in India. You know, there's a vaccine made by a company in Pune, which is an mRNA vaccine which has gone into trial. So we're going to see a very large range of vaccines coming soon. You know, again, I'd like to stress the view when things are going well that, oh, well, things are fine. We have a couple of vaccines. Why do we need more? To a swing at the other end when, my God, life is tough. Why don't we have more vaccines? You know, these things should be viewed a little calmly. We have vaccines at hand. They are being scaled up for manufacturing, and we are seeing more vaccines coming up, and we need to plan supply and demand so that we effectively use these vaccines. Keep in mind that primarily at this stage today, we need to focus on social measures, non-pharmaceutical interventions very strongly in a manner which we did quite well early on, but in a very different context where we have tools such as vaccines and better care available.
Dr. Vijayaraghavan, we keep highlighting the number of vaccinations that we are doing. And that's, you know, I mean, the numbers are phenomenal. There's no doubt about that, even though it may take some more time to get where we want to get. And I don't think anybody is denying that. But what about universal vaccination, in other words, adults? And I ask this because there is a certain context even today with the Delhi Chief Minister saying, look, open it up for all adults. We'll go from door to door to door and we'll do it. Now, obviously, there is a supply side problem. But what are your views on opening it up to 18 plus adults?
A very hypothetical question. You know, when we are the key aspect of vaccination for the country and for the world in general is equity and access. It's not, you know, theoretical statements about whether everyone should have the vaccine or only someone should have vaccine. Equity and access means when you have a certain number of vaccines in a certain time period, you see where it is needed the most and roll it out. And you make sure that others are protected in multiple ways so that when, you know, vaccines become more available and distributable, they get it. So yes, I mean, it would be wonderful if vaccines were magically to rain everywhere immediately, that everyone has access. So it's, I don't see the logic in discussing how one should roll it out from door to door or otherwise in a situation where the calibration of supply and demand is just ramping up really well right now.
Okay. In 1 month, we've seen the skyrocketing number of cases, why do we still not have a precise fix on the strain that is causing all of this? Because clinically, so many doctors across the country have suggested that this is more transmissible.
Why do you think it's a strain which is cause of the rise alone?
Is it not a different strain?
There are multiple components which go into a rise, and we shouldn't pin ourselves down onto one or another explanation. It's the virus and its variants that could be important in some context. It's a behavior which could be important in another. It could be the number of people who have already been exposed in a population, which is the third. It could be the extent of vaccination in a country, which is the fourth. And all these are multiple parameters which are very complex. So the reason why I'm pointing out this issue about the variant, and variants are important, and they could have an important role, is it's worrying to blame the rise on something which is not in our control. We must keep in mind that the virus is transmitted through humans, and human behavior, therefore, plays a very important part, no matter what the strain is. And that should be our focus right now. While strains are important and understanding their biology is important, and while that is being done, because it's important to know whether they are immune evasive or vaccine evasive,
yeah,
and what to do and to what extent, to just say that we will wait for that and it's something to do with the strain is not the correct thing to say without saying that our primary focus now needs to be on our behavior and make sure that it's appropriate.
That said, sir, how soon before we get this answer? Again, because we want to know how effective our existing vaccines are to these strains.
But we do have that answer. We do know that the different strains circulating around the world have elements of immune evasiveness and increased transmissibility, and yet they are not vaccine recalcitrant yet, particularly against severe very high level of morbidity. And therefore, it's important to keep in mind that as that data comes in more about hospitals and patients and how much of them are infected by various strains, and that's coming in, we are actually on reasonably good ground right now. Scientists all over the world, including in India, are also working at intense speed to make new vaccines against new variants.
Yeah.
So even though that the escape is rather modest right now, should there be a more stronger escape variant or a lineage which emerges, we are going to be prepared for that. So I think really the focus should be on what we are doing, analyzing the cases and the hospitalizations really well, and not wondering whether the strain is doing something magical or not. Those kinds of concerns may have been reasonable at the start of the pandemic, where we didn't know much. Right now, great calm is needed, and our behavior needs to be appropriate.
Yep. Dr. Vijayaraghavan, India is recording the highest number of cases in a 24-hour period compared to other countries. Therefore, the question that's often asked is a lockdown across large parts of India something that's imminent? Is it something that should not be ruled out?
Why do you have lockdowns when your system cannot cope and you need to prevent the viral spreading by preventing people from interacting with each other to give you time to put the system back in shape so that it can cope? That was the situation at the start of the pandemic. Today, we have scaled up enormously all over the country in terms of our oxygen tanks, masks, PPE, hospital mechanisms, and so on. And the focus should be on using that baseline, which we learned early on last year, to amplify and get everything done. That's very urgent and can be done. If we do that well in each of our environments where the surge is going on, if you look at micro environments and manage people's movements there sensibly, if we adopt COVID-appropriate behavior, then effectively, what you're doing is you're distancing people effectively from each other without having a lockdown. Can you manage that? If one can manage that, and I think you can in most contexts, lockdowns can be avoided.
Final question, sir. How concerned are you about the spread of the virus to small areas outside the metros, not just in terms of, you know, people getting unwell, but also medical infrastructure, which is not often as much as we would like it to be in smaller areas.
You know, I would like to stress that the conversation today needs to be very different from similar kinds of questions asked a year ago, for the simple reason, through experience and through science, we have learned a lot. And therefore, we have to be a lot calmer now than before. Of course, it's a matter of great concern when they're spread to areas which haven't seen these kinds of diseases before and the infrastructure can cope with it. But if you just flash back to last year, we were talking about, you know, establishing capacity in hospitals, having distance teaching routes, training people, getting them to centers, all of that is in place. So we must focus more on seeing that in any location where there's a surge, that people have access to all these resources. Those should be the kinds of questions and not the same questions which we asked a year ago.
All right, Dr. Vijayaraghavan, wonderful speaking to you. Thank you for answering all of those questions. Thank you very much indeed. Let's hope we get the numbers of vaccination up and let's hope we can all fight this together. Thank you very much, sir, for being here.
Thank you very much.